different ones at one.
So next piece of the afternoon session will be looking at aspects of Ajahn Chah's early life. So are you? So my two compadres just digging into the mints in the back row there. Invite them forth, and the three of us will be presenting this section. Along with myself, we'll be covering a little bit of the historical side of Ajahn Chah's life, his childhood and early monastic life. The other aspects, his years of practice and as a teacher, will be covered by my two friends. And to my immediate left is Paul Breiter, who was a monk with Ajahn Chah, known as Varapanyo in those days. And he was ordained as a bhikkhu in 72? 71. Okay. You know, these two were novices together in Bangkok, in a temple there, and then were ordained as bhikkhus and came up to the northeast and both became disciples of Ajahn Chah. Paul Breiter, some of you might have seen his name together with Jack Kornfield on the cover of A Still Forest Pool. And also, Paul wrote a very wonderful book called Venerable Father, which is a great treasure of a book. It recounts his own years of training as a monk with Ajahn Chah, and many of his trials and tribulations and moments of exaltation, although the trials are more common than the exaltations. Hopefully that'll be out in general circulation again in the near future. There are various free distribution editions of it, and it has been published in Thailand before, but it is a book to be looked out for and greatly treasured. He's also just some leaflets and a little poster for a book that Paul has just been working on for the last couple of years called Being Dharma, which is a completely fresh set of translations of Ajahn Chah's teachings. And as he commented, as I saw the poster, that it didn't have his name on the cover, he said, "Yep, upstaged by Kornfield again." So, because Jack's not here today, we can say that he'll be here tomorrow. Paul has been deeply involved with this tradition for many years. Also has practiced in the Zen and Tibetan traditions since that time, and so he'll be presenting some aspects of Ajahn Chah's life and teaching. And then to his left is Joseph Kappel, who was my first Buddhist teacher and was the abbot of Wat Pananachat when I drifted in there, looking more like he does now. Much worse. Considerably more ragged, anyway. But we both had an earring. I have a very close and fond relationship with Joseph. He was Ajahn Prabhakaro in those days, and he was a monk for over 20 years. Paul was in robes for 6 or 7 years? 7 years. And so Joseph, after about 13 years in Thailand, came to live in England and stayed in the monasteries there, was abbot of the monastery in the north of England. for the last few years before he left the robes. 6 years ago? 6 years ago you disrobed?
Ten.
Ten? Yeah, right. So he is now living in Massachusetts and is studying at Harvard University. Paul is resident here in Northern California. So we'll begin this section with myself talking a little bit about the history of Ajahn Chah's early life. The aim with these sections is to give presentations for 15 or 20 minutes and then open things up for questions from all of you, and to have a kind of open discussion and dialogue. Ajahn Chah was born in, he wasn't born Ajahn Chah, surprisingly enough. He was just plain Chuang Chot, in June of 1918, in a small village in the northeast of Thailand, in Ubon province. And Ubon province, for those of you who are not familiar with Thai geography, is the corner of Thailand where Thailand borders on Laos and Cambodia, like that far eastern corner of that bulge out to the right-hand side of Thailand, where it borders the Mekong River. So it really is the back of beyond. And he was born in a little village there to a reasonably prosperous village family. Most people in the village were subsistence rice farmers. He was the fifth of 11 children, which in Thailand in those days, and still largely into these days, is not an enormous family. He was a boisterous child, chunky. He always had this sort of solid frame to him, and exuberant. Even as a child, he was very honest, and he was a no one of his childhood companions can remember him ever getting into a fight with anyone. By his own words, he was always a truth teller. He was also a natural leader amongst his companions, and always seemed to be the one who was kind of leading the games, and was that no games were quite so much fun unless Cha was in the pack. And also, this is from a biography of Ajahn Chah called Upalamani, which means Ajahn Chah was very good on word plays. He was delighted in kind of linguistic tricks. And so Ajahn Jayasaro, who's an English monk who wrote the biography in Thai, who's also equally fond of word plays, called it Upalamani, which both means the jewel in the lotus and also the jewel of Ubon province. So he was very tickled with that one. And this is a biography called Upalamani that he wrote, that's very, very slowly being translated into English. And I'll read a few passages here. He relates a childhood memory of playing the role of a monk. He would sit sternly on an old bamboo bed with a pakoma, the blue and white wrap they use, draped over his left shoulder like a robe, and his friends would be the laity. The mealtime is probably the only event in the monk's daily life that's interesting enough to lend itself to drama, and it was that which the children would enact. Lung Por would ring a bell, and his friends would bring a tray of fruit and cool water. This is at the age of like 5 or 6, you know. After bowing 3 times, they would offer it to him meekly. He, in return, would give them the 5 precepts of the Buddhist layperson and a blessing. And so sometimes people just fall into these roles. Then, very unusually, he decided to go to the monastery on his own at the age of 9. Oftentimes in Thailand, the difficult boys, those who have worn their parents ragged and have also worn most of the relatives ragged, and no one can figure out what to do with them, it's like, okay, send them to the temple for a while. That'll, you know, straighten them out. So that's oftentimes the reason why a young boy would be sent to the to a monastery to go and live and to help out and to sort of be say imbibe some more direct spiritual and calming enwisening influence. But Ajahn Chah decided to go on his own at the age of 9. And also you should bear in mind that the average Thai family is a very, very close unit, and the idea of leaving home is a very heartbreaking and difficult thing to do. They're very, very close. So for a 9-year-old to say, I want to leave home and go into the monastery was kind of unusual. And he describes this himself, again, a couple of passages from Upalamani. Well, the causes and conditions were there. As a boy, I had a fear of committing evil actions. I was always a straightforward lad. I was honest and didn't tell lies. When there were things to be shared out, I was considerate. I would take less than my due. That basic nature just kept maturing until one day I said to myself, go to the monastery. I asked my friends if they had ever thought of doing the same thing. None of them had. The idea just arose naturally. I'd say it was the result of past actions. As time went on, wholesome qualities steadily grew inside me until one day they led me to decide and do as I did. On another occasion, in a more humorous vein, Lungpo told some lay disciples that he had become a dekwat, that's a monastery child or a temple boy, because he was tired of watering the family tobacco plants and because the humdrum daily round of chores was so tedious and repetitive. He says, I was just a small little child. I never smoked tobacco in my life. But even so, first thing in the morning, as soon as I got up, I was driven off to the fields to water tobacco plants, hundreds of them. It was infuriating. And as one of Lungpo's sisters remembers it, a small accident brought things to a head. This is one of his sisters speaking. Him going off to live in the monastery wasn't arranged by our parents. It was his own idea. One day he was helping his brothers and sisters pounding rice, but he wasn't putting much heart into it. Well, it so happened that the pounder slipped out and we had to drive in a wedge to keep it firm. He wouldn't help. But then, while the rest of us were doing it, he got hit by the wood we were using as a mallet. It must have hurt him because he got angry and shouted out, "That's it! I'm going to go and ordain." So, along with the rest of us, you know, I showed up at Wat Phananachad intending to stay for 2 or 3 days. You know, that sometimes the... And Ajahn Pasna and Ajahn Sumedho determined to stay no longer than 2 years. Sometimes these impulses have a way of lasting a long time. So he went into the monastery and then lived as a temple boy, as a dekwat, for about 4 years, from 9 till he was 13. And then when he was 13, he took ordination as a samanera, a novice. That's like a sort of junior simplified form of the monastic discipline, and where you would wear the brown robe and you'd have a lot more rules than you would just as a temple boy. So he did that put his heart into living in the monastery as well as he could until the age of 16. And at that time, his teacher in the monastery would take him on his regular visits to visit Ajahn Chah's family in the village. The monastery was inside the village. So Ajahn Chah, dutifully as a novice, would go along and attend to his teacher, and these visits would get more and more frequent, and he thought, oh, yeah, my teacher's really putting a lot of effort into helping my family, till finally the teacher told him that he was going to disrobe and propose to Ajahn Chah's elder sister. So young Chah was kind of confused at the sudden turnaround in his great master, and at the wobbly age of 16, when the hormones are flowing and the restlessness is running apace, he decided to leave as well. So he went back to helping the family, and then went to work as everyone else did in the rice fields, looking after the farmlands. When he was 18 and 19, then different element came in to the picture, and this was when he fell in love for the first time. And this was with a young woman called Jai, which means heart. And she was the stepsister of his best friend called Put. So this is again a passage from the Upalamani. When Longpo finally fell in love, it was with a girl from his own village. Her name was Jai, the stepsister of his companion Put. The girl's parents were pleased with the prospective match. Longpo was a friend of the family, good-natured, hard-working and honest. And perhaps more importantly, his family was wealthy enough to offer a good bride price. In those days, it was taboo for young lovers to be alone together. The custom dictated that they would meet at the girl's house, upstairs on the porch in the evening, where she would be sitting demurely, spinning wool. Longpo began to spend more and more of his evenings at Put's house. Relations between young men and women were strictly overseen by elders. Lovers, forbidden to touch, were quick to learn the nuances of the verbal caress. In Isan, in northeast Thai village life, banter between young men and women was inventive, and the ability to extemporize was much admired. The young men would swagger and flatter and ardently woo in the "I can't live without you" style, while girls would play shy and hard to get, or else wittily insult their suitor's manhood with such phrases as, "The loud-mouthed swain is holding a limp kite in a windless sky." I couldn't resist that one. Yeah. This was just one of the well-known jibes gleefully repeated. But witty repartee soon loses its charm when genuine feelings are engaged, and late at night Longpo and Jai would like to sit out in the starry coolness talking quietly with Jai's parents asleep. Or were they? In their mosquito net a few feet away. So then events took a little turn that had a very powerful effect on him. And as Ajahn Chah himself recounts it, he says, "When I was 18, I liked a girl. She liked me too, and as these things go, after some time of liking her, I fell deeply in love. I wanted to marry her. I daydreamed about her, about having her by my side, helping me out, working in the fields, making a living together. Then one day on my way home from work, I met my best friend, Put, on the road. He said, 'Cha, I'm taking the girl.' When I heard those words, I went completely numb. I was in a state of shock for hours afterwards. I remembered the prediction of an astrologer that I would have no wife but many children. At that time, I wondered how it could be possible. Simply, and with the unquestioned prerogative that parents of his age and culture possessed, Put's father and his wife decided that their two stepchildren should marry. There was no more to be said. The reasons were pragmatic, economic. If Put married Jai, the family would be saved a bride price they could ill afford. They had just acquired land some distance from the village that should not be left fallow. The young couple could move out there and farm it together." So, then Ajahn Chah, having had that great heartbreak, and he said in later years that for the first 7 years of his monastic life, he still couldn't really stop thinking about Jai and imagining ways that they might be able to get together. But until he went back into the monastery, he says, "I was fed up. I didn't want to live with my parents, and the more I thought about it, the more fed up I became. I just wanted to go off and be by myself the whole time. But to where, I didn't know. I felt like that for a number of years. I was fed up, but not with anything in particular. I just wanted to go somewhere and be alone. These were the feelings I had before I ordained. I wasn't fully conscious of them, but they were there all the same, all of the time." Then as he reached the age of 20, in 1939, those feelings of kind of discomfort and kind of world weariness, the feeling of discontent and lack of meaning in worldly things, overtook him. He thought, well, maybe becoming a monk will help me resolve it, will help me understand and help me to find some peace and some meaning. So he reordained. Took the full ordination in the local monastery as a monk, and stayed there. And in those days, still, as is often the case in village monasteries, there's not a lot of emphasis on meditation practice. It was mostly studying the scriptures, learning the Pali language, helping to teach the local children. So that's really what his life consisted of for the first number of years. Until in 1943, which is 4 years later, his father became ill, And at that time, Ajahn Chah was away at a distant monastery practicing for some, or training for some exams. And he decided to go home to see his father and not finish his exams at that time. And surely enough, his father was close to death. When he went back to visit him, then his father, who was on his last legs, had a final conversation with him, and this is recounted here in the biography. Lungpo's father, Po Ma, was proud to have a son in the robes, and whenever Lungpo visited home, would always encourage him in his efforts and make a request. "Please don't disrobe, venerable sir. I invite you to stay as a monk indefinitely." This is a deliberately literal translation. It's hard to convey in English the tenor of a conversation between a Thai monk and his parents. Filial piety is greatly stressed in Thai society, and the relationship between parents and children is generally warm and close. Yet when the son becomes a monk, their way of relating to each other instantly and radically changes. Those parents are now lay people. They sit on a lower seat at a respectful distance. They use honorifics when referring to their son and humble personal pronouns when referring to themselves. There is a formality and ritual air to their conversations that one from another culture might find odd and somewhat unnatural. And yet for a canny observer, there is no question that behind the form, the deep affection remains intact. Now as he lay weak and shrunken on his deathbed, Po Ma made the request once more. It was difficult for him to speak, and he said, "You've made the right choice. Don't change it. Lay life is full of all kinds of pain and difficulties. There's no real peace or contentment in it. Stay as a monk." On previous occasions, Lungpo had always kept silent, his head slightly bowed, showing respect but an unwillingness to announce such a commitment. This time, however, in a quiet voice he replied, "No, I won't disrobe. Why should I do that?" His father's face relaxed into a warm, contented smile, and he drifted off into sleep. So his father passed away about a fortnight later, and from that time, then the visions of the image of his father's wasting body and the final days of his sickness were constantly with Ajahn Chah. They kept recurring in front of his eyes over and over, and he couldn't dislodge this from his mind. So he made his way through the final exams that he did to get his grade 3 Pali studies. Naktam 3. Naktam 8. And he then finally carried on another 3 years altogether until 1946. By the time he got to 44, 45, he was really despondent with the village monastery scene and teaching students who weren't particularly interested, and he decided, okay, I'm going to have to do something very radical, because this, again, this kind of pain in his heart and the shock of losing his father and the presence of his father's death, and the fact that he knew, here were all these wonderful teachings in the scriptures, I'm reading them, I'm studying them, I'm instructing people in them, but yet they haven't had any effect upon my heart, they're not really helping me, they can't do anything about the pain of my loss of my father and the heartbreak over his girlfriend. And he felt that all of these teachings were so precious and so important, but they were out of his reach, they were of no use to him. So he really felt he had to do something about it. So at this time, he made a solemn resolve. "I dedicate my body and mind, my whole life, to the practice of the Lord Buddha's teachings in their entirety. I will realize the truth in this lifetime. I will let go of everything and follow the teachings. No matter how much suffering and difficulty I have to endure, I will persevere. Otherwise, there will be no end to my doubts. I must make this life as even and continuous as a single day and night. I will abandon attachments to mind and body and follow the Buddha's teachings until I know their truth for myself." So, at that point, he left the village monastery and took up the life of a wandering Tudong monk and started to go in search of teachers. So I'll finish my piece at that point.